Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
Delighted, as always, to be with you here on this show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Nice.
It's a midsummer, you know, kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Going on here. How are we already halfway through? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Life is like a roll of toilet paper, you know. The closer you get to the end, the faster it goes.
It's indeed true.
We can get all the dad jokes out of the way now, or we can intersperse them throughout the program.
I think we can go either way.
People are like, please, no. Don't. All right. Well, today's guest, I'm really excited for it. I think like there's a... I don't know if there's one key difference between the world of B2B manufacturing marketing and everybody else. But if there, you know, if there was one key difference, it is kind of just how nuanced and complex it is. You're often selling something that is very, can be oftentimes very highly customized and, again, deeply technical in nature, selling to a technical audience.
A large number of technical buyers in that audience.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not uncommon for a buying committee to get 8, 10, 12 people deep.
Yeah.
And it's a and then people, you know, I can hear the SaaS guys now saying, oh, well, we're like that too. And it's like, yeah, but the, you know, the purchase decision doesn't unfold over 36 months either. It's usually a little faster for those guys, whereas here, you know, it can be very long, 12, 18, even again 24 or 36 months. So it the complexity is something that is I think worth peeling back, and I think today's guest is going to be instrumental in helping us do that.
I think so too, and I think one of the things that sets our next guest apart from potentially other marketers and people within sales in these complex B2B buying processes is that he is also deeply technical, significant expertise in the subject matter and kind of bringing that to it. Mm. So, which I think is a unique offering that should be very instructive for our listeners.
So
joining us today is Rajiv Tekkar. Rajiv is the Director of Marketing and Business Development at Solana Semiconductor. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Rajiv.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Rajiv, it's awesome to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us. And I wonder if we could start things off by learning a little bit more about Solana Semiconductor. What are you all up to there?
Thank you. Yeah, so Solana Semiconductor, we are San Diego-based. It's been around since 2008. And their claim to fame is analog innovation. So they basically develop complex technology to solve very unique problems. They started off with some RF antenna business, and they sold it off to a company, Qualcomm, about in 2012 timeframe. And from then on, they moved into developing power devices where you're doing power conversion from one voltage to another voltage for multiple devices. And that very quickly became a commodity business, especially with China coming in. And so they decided to change gears and go into even more technical market, wherein we're heading into the self-driving sensors with LiDAR. And they came into developing laser drivers, which are used in these LiDAR sensors for autonomous driving in the ADAS. So that's basically what they do. They have another group. The company headquarters is actually in Australia. So the group here in San Diego does this part of it. Other than laser drivers, we do analog to digital converters. Again, a very niche business, highly technical. And the group in Australia is doing UV LEDs for basically taking care of disinfection side and also developing some unique material technology for that.
That's really cool, and it's what a fascinating space to be in, especially right now. My guess is you've been in the automotive space for a while and brought that experience to the team at Solana.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, that is the reason. I've been with Solana for about a year. But I've been in Detroit automotive for over 25 years. I've been in Detroit since 1990. And I basically started off basically in engineering. So I was in engineering for 20 years, right up to being an engineering manager for a group at Bosch. and we were developing sensors. And essentially, it came to a point where I realized that we were winning business, but we were not profitable. My sales guys would come and say, Rajiv, hey, we won. But by the way, we are losing money. You need to find ways to get money out of this thing. And I say, there was no competition. Why did you drop the price so much, you know? And so after a few cycles of that, I said, I got to be on the front end of this business. You know, I'm on the backside. This doesn't work. So that's basically how I moved out from engineering for 20 years into moving into product management, then into marketing and you know, mix of marketing and sales roles. And as I go along, I basically stayed technical. I mean, I love the technical part of the deal. And what brings me into this space is my knowledge of automotive business and sensors business, and also the difference between Detroit automotive and California. You know, people don't understand the automotive industry, how it works, especially on the California side. They bring in very good technology, but they get frustrated with the process in the automotive side. So I bring that blend, understanding the technical part, how things work. And yeah, I'm enjoying the space and role. It's a good fit for me between the technology being developed for autonomous driving and the automotive side of the business.
I don't know if I want to go down this tangent too far, but I'm curious about this difference between the California automotive sector and the Detroit one. Are you speaking mostly of regulatory and the differences there?
It's not so much of regulatory as the mindset. On the California side, you know, it's very software-based in the sense that, you know, I develop a piece of code, I try it out for an hour or two, I run it at a couple of machines, and I just over-the-air flash it, and we start running with it. And Detroit is not done that way. I mean, we've been around for 100 years, and basically we had so many recalls over all these years, and the industry has learned you don't launch something without doing thorough testing completely as a full vehicle in many levels. You know, before all of these thousands of parts put together, every part has to go through its own cycle of testing and evaluation before you put it together. So, you know, nothing comes out, you know, 2 to 4 years. I mean, it's normally been 4 years, but 2 years is now coming in there, but nothing short of 2 years comes into play very quickly. And whereas California, you know, 1 month, 6 months, I'm off and running, you know, and that's a different mindset.
That's a very different mindset and different culture. Yeah.
How does that play into your thinking when you're marketing into organizations that are either wild, wild west over here or so safe it takes forever on the other side?
Yeah, it's a very interesting cocktail going on of technology now in this autonomous space. And on one side, very good, interesting technology coming out from California, whereas when the rubber hits the road, it's got to come to Detroit. And so, you know, and so you need a blend of these two spaces. And after being in traditional automotive for a long time, you know, I was with Bosch for, you know, long time, but I was with Bosch for 14 years. Then I joined with Osram for 5 years in semiconductor space. And there I was selling lasers to these LiDAR making companies. And that was my first introduction to this startup space on the California side. And after 5 years of selling lasers to many LiDAR companies, I ended up joining a startup, Velodyne LiDAR, which was one of the leaders at the time in the LiDAR space. And I worked with them for 4 years. And I love the startup world. I love the technology. I mean, I don't have to worry so much. I mean, you know, regarding the politics involved, the decision-making involved, there's 100 people involved in making decisions. Startup, you know, 3 people, you know, you talk about it. Yeah, that sounds right. Let's go run for it. You know, so I love that part of it, because in the traditional automotive side, you got to watch your back and your side and everything before you make a step, especially if you're watching your career along with, you know, the technical part of it. And I just love to get rid of all of that clock stuff hanging over me and just do what I love to do. And that I love that part of this thing.
That's fine. And it's, I said I didn't want to go too far down this road, but it's been a fascinating little tangent. And I think we could almost build a whole show around it, to be honest. But I think, you know, Rajiv, you were talking about how, you know, these things, you know, what you're selling is deeply technical and to varied audiences. And I'm assuming that part of the secret sauce there is in some way getting out of the technical and getting out of just a listing of features and getting into more of a translation into business value and what's delivered at a bit of a higher level. How do you go about kind of getting out of the technical weeds, if you will?
Yeah, so there is a point. So there is a process. First of all, you got to understand, you know, what is it you're trying to solve? What is the industry? Who are you talking to? You know, the very basics of this stuff. And at least when you talk about technical sales, B2B, it really starts with the engineering team, which means that you need to be speaking the language of engineering, and you need to be, and they are always constrained in time. So if you don't have something of real value, you are not going to get their ear. So one of the toughest thing is to make sure that you got something of value, you understand the problem which is being solved, and then you got to find the right person or the right people across, you know, the same problem. You know, if here in my case, I'm talking about LiDAR, I need to talk to the experts of LiDAR in different LiDAR companies, you know, the CTO and the top technical people. And I got to bring something of value to them, which they say, wow, this thing is something that I'm trying to solve, and it's going to make my life easier. That's really, so finding the people, knowing that you got something of value, that is a first step of that. And really, the sale process for this kind of a business doesn't begin unless you're able to break through that technical part of the deal first. And only then you start going, you know, the back end where the buyer starts coming in and the technical sales is quite far down the funnel, nearly like you're 70% down the funnel before the buyer starts showing up, and you got to go through the process of getting the quotes and all the collateral and getting all of the different things in place.
So I want to be clear on it. When you say the buyer, you're talking about procurement, like the...
Yes, procurement part of the deal.
And how, you know, I guess it's hard to ask this question without being a touch pejorative almost in nature, but I think oftentimes sales folks are inclined to think it's their bubbly personalities and ability to order an old fashioned at the hotel bar that gets them the deals, that they're basically it's superior relationship building that helps them navigate that process once you're 70% of the way down and you have to start dealing with procurement who doesn't care about the old fashions. I guess I've always kind of rolled my eyes a little bit at that, and my guess is that you can't get there and stay there without having the technical chops, and that a good relationship can only carry you so far. Would you tend to agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially when you talk about technical sales and your entry point is a technical person and usually a very highly placed technical lead person, his time is constrained. So he may be nice and give you one meeting, but if you don't really deliver in that meeting, you're not coming back. So you got to be respectful of that, which basically means that you need to do your research. You need to know exactly what you got. You got to know exactly where he is at, and you got to bring him something of real value for him to invite you back.
Because you're really seeing that person as that's your champion that's going to help you get all the rest of the way through the buying committee.
Absolutely. And you got to go in there with an open mind. Just because you think what you got is absolutely fantastic doesn't mean that he agrees with you. And a lot of times they will give you very good feedback about your technology, about the strengths and weaknesses. And if you see that this is not a good fit, the best thing to do is say, thank you for your time. I will come back when I got something better and move out. You know, don't waste his time and don't keep knocking on his door, because that will spoil the relationship for the second time around.
There is something so incredibly powerful about walking away from any sort of, you know, where you or your organization stands to benefit. And you're like, you know what? We're just not the right solution for you at this time with these specs, whatever, and be willing to walk away. I think it shows tremendous strength of character and definitely ends up helping you down the line, even if it's just more karmic in nature and not necessarily directly with that prospect.
No, absolutely right. And you know, when in this technical world, it ends up being a very small circle, and you tend to run to the same people. If you're going to be staying in the same business, you will come across them again, and they will remember you either if you serve them well or you help them out. You know, it comes around, so you will always get it back if you did the right thing in this case.
You know, baked into that is this notion that no, they didn't see the business value that we saw in bringing this product to them or this solution to them. How many times does the prospect illuminate a business value that you didn't realize that your solution brought?
Yes, so you're right. I would say nearly 50% of the time they will come out. We walk into the door thinking we have a certain value proposition on that side. And of course, before he opens up, you know, he needs to understand what you got, and he's got to see something interesting. And then he will offer, okay, yeah, you're doing it this way. You know, it's a cat, you're skinning it in three ways, but I got this fourth and fifth way, which is even better than that. And this is where, you know, the marketing person, you know, you got to have enough of technical skills, because you will usually have a highly technical person from your side also at that meeting. And if you don't handle the egos involved, because now you got a guy on your side who is also very technical, he's got his ego on, you know, regarding how good my stuff is, and the other guy's got his own stuff. And you got to really balance that. You got to allow them to go at each other to some extent, but then pull them apart at the right time. You know, and that is really a skill that you develop over time, knowing that you're getting enough value and you got to pull them apart for the next round.
We've had over 300 episodes of this podcast. We've never had anybody on the show talking about that, but that is exactly what happens. And it's wonderful insight, Rajiv.
At that point, it's not really hurting cats so much as you have very dangerous, very large cats.
I think we could tug this in a bunch of different ways, but I'm just trying to trying to get a little bit deeper into, because I think you're uncovering parts of the nuance of the sales process and marketing into these highly niche categories that are very valuable to listeners, just to hear this kind of boots on the ground perspective. How do you go about kind of nuancing your messaging, your positioning, or how you talk about the benefits and business value between verticals? Do you ever find that you have to kind of layer different messaging or different value props, even though you're selling the same product, but it's in the different industries?
Yes, we do. So in our case, we have laser drivers, and laser drivers, you can use them for very powerful lasers, like for the LiDARs in self-driving cars. And you can also use them in the golf scopes, where you're using it to figure out how far you're going to hit, or hope to hit, let's say, on that side. So you don't need 1,000 yards to, you know, on your golf scope, but you need, you know, 300 to 400 meters on the LiDAR side. And your product may be very similar on those tools. And so you need to not only differentiate the different value, this guy doesn't need the range, so what exactly he needs. So here he needs a longer battery life. You know, he doesn't need the range, but he needs to make sure that it's very efficient so that you're not using too much battery on the golf scope. So that is his value proposition. And then, of course, the price points are going to be different. The qualification you need, whereas industrial versus automotive, is different. So you really need to make sure that, you know, you have a product which can maybe meet different verticals, but then you cannot have the similar kind of pricing. They don't have this, you know, you got to find the proper value proposition and place it in the right way to get the traction from the market.
Part of that, too, is also knowing that you don't provide the entire solution. So you're integrating with other partners, and you're bringing, kind of your ability to work with them and understand where your product fits is really important for the end buyer too, to show that you can play well with others. Hey,
oh, absolutely. I mean, in this technical world, your part is touching at least 10 other parts around you. And this is your ecosystem, because, you know, so what you do is almost like a pickup basketball team. You got to know the best players around you, and you essentially tend to promote each other, saying that, hey, you know, you're looking for this component. I know a really good company which can support you with that. And you build up this kind of a relationship in the ecosystem, And as long as you're not deceiving the engineering team, because you cannot deceive technical specs. You know, you can give a PowerPoint, whatever. As soon as you test this, you know, this is crap or this doesn't work. So you got to have your reputation behind what you're recommending. And over time, you build this trust among within your ecosystem. And a lot of times we are laser drivers. So obviously we partner very closely with people who make lasers. And so on one hand, we help them sell their lasers, and they help their customers find a good laser driver by recommending us. So it's a win-win proposition on this side. So this kind of a relationship, you got to build along everything you're touching and interfacing for you to really grow over time.
You mentioned this diverse array of partners selling products into diverse sectors with different benefit messages, et cetera, different kind of ways of speaking about the value that they deliver. Consistency globally has to be a big challenge. How do you think about that? Do you kind of feel that you're wearing two hats? Like one is your global brand consistency hat, and then one is around how do we provide tools for people to localize their messaging to their more local contexts and prospects?
Yeah, so in the technical world, it's not that much of an issue, because a technical problem is a technical problem. Globally, it's the same problem in that side. So the messaging is mainly in terms of how do you say that, you know, you got a good product. Like I might say that, hey, here, you know, our laser driver can deliver 1,000 watts in 3 nanosecond pulse width on that side. And you know, you want that same message to be said globally. You know, you don't want one guy to say we can do 800 watts in 2 nanoseconds or 1 nanosecond. So that kind of stuff has got to be, you know, similar going across. But at the same time, you know, you got to allow for local regulations, you know, whether you need to automotive qualification, SIL qualification, the local stuff in a different region, China or Japan or Europe, wherever may be different. So you got to make sure that they can adjust for that, saying I meet this kind of a spec or that kind of a spec, you know, across different regions.
I want to I'm going to bounce around a little bit here as we kind of bring the show to a close in our last 7-8 minutes or so together. I want to understand, you know, because you're this odd hybrid, Rajiv, between marketing and engineering. What's the biggest mistake that marketers make with engineers?
Yeah, this is actually pretty common, is that, you know, you got to think about a long-term relationship with these niche group of clients that you're working with, you know, your top 25, let's say, huge customers, which basically means you're going to be hanging around them for a long time, 10 to 15 years, which means you got to build trust, which basically means that, you know, you don't overpromise and underdeliver. If anything, you underpromise and overdeliver. That is the number one thing. When you say you're going to get something done, that guy's timeline is hanging on you. So make sure that you are absolutely able to deliver what you say you can deliver. And that is the first line of trust, which you cannot break. And that builds up with time.
I think it's really important that our listeners hear that. Like this, as we often talk about success in niche markets, means that you're selling into a finite prospect pool. There's not another 2,000 new prospects showing up tomorrow that you didn't know about yesterday. I don't think, though, anybody's ever put it quite the fact that you're going to be hanging around these people for 15 years.
Yes.
Like, maybe you don't piss them off in your first interaction.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And more product, better work.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, engineering, they love technical details. So, you know, don't be hiding stuff from them. You know, give them whatever they want, whatever detail they want. You know, as long as you have an NDA, you know, be open, make the life easy. Don't make them pull things like teeth out of you.
Does that translate as well to your, and this is just a very simple tactical question, but do you gate resources on your web platforms about these things, or do you insist on capturing an email address?
So some of them, we just give it away. You can download for free. But then something which is more deeply technical, we ask at least for an email address, a business email address, to make sure it's legit before we provide that, because a lot of effort went into creating that document and information. So we need to at least follow up on that lead.
I think that's a smart strategy.
Yeah, I love that. It's one of the things I like about manufacturing is we still get to do that.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of other areas of marketing where they just had to give up on gating resources, but we can still get away with it. You know, and I think there's, you can be, if you're providing something truly of value. One of the things that I think is challenging in these highly niche spaces is the lines between marketing and sales get blurred an awful lot. And I think to an awful lot of marketers, what we've been talking about in some ways sounds a lot more like sales than it sounds like marketing. So I want to ask, what's your favorite campaign? Like, let's take it back up to marketing. What have you done in the last while, or what marketing initiative have you deployed that you're like, I killed that. That was, I had more like that. My career is going to be going up and to the right.
Yeah. So for me, of course, you know, for account-based or target marketing, wherein you have a niche pool of customers, accounts defined, and you got to know what's their favorite watering hole or conference. Where they tend to meet. And really what you want to do there is that other than having your own booth where you're providing your stuff, you try to get a speaking spot. You know, you try to go and have a talk in there wherein you're not just pitching your company and the sales material, you also try to hit a few technical points regarding the kind of challenges that you're solving in that side. And what that does is that if there's 300 people at that conference, if you just have a booth, it's very hard for people to come to you and ask you, you know, your stuff you're doing. But if you speak on the stage and you explain some of the things you're trying to solve, that 300-person audience kind of feels, hey, I know this guy. I know what he's talking about. There's something here of interest to me. So out of the 300 people, there may be only about 30 people who are really a good fit for you, but you can't find time to meet these 300 people. But that 30 people, they will come to your booth now because they know you. They know what you're talking about. They feel comfortable approaching you. And to me, I've found that to be one of the best techniques to bring that funnel closer to you, because it's not easy to meet 300 people at a conference and have a decent conversation and figure out who are the best fits for you going forward.
And have you, a lot of people try to navigate their way onto speaking slots in the conferences and onto the stage. They find it challenging. So I just wonder, how have you just found that to be an easy ask and people are keen to have you, or is it a pay-to-play type of situation?
No, you build up your own brand, if you will. Yeah. So I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I'm an SAE instructor for LiDAR infrared camera. I've done a fair amount of speaking spots. I basically build myself up. So it helps. It tends to open doors for me. And that's really what you have to do. And of course, at the end of the day, you need to have some cool technology. And you know, that you can be talking in thin air.
Yeah. Something cool to talk about. And if you're an instructor on the subject, I could see how that would help. I mean, it would give the conference organizers a level of comfort that you're not just going to be simply selling from the stage, but that you're bringing a different perspective.
Some real legitimacy. Mm. Legitimacy.
Yes. Yeah, that helps on both sides.
Well, Rajiv, this has been a fascinating conversation. I think it's... I thank you for shining a light on it. Not a lot of people get to see inside the inner workings of marketing and sales of this type of technology. And I thank you for guiding us through it today.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure being on the show, and I appreciate it very much.
It's pretty neat to go from deeply technical sales all the way to personal branding and back. So thank you, Rajiv.